This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 273, for the weekend of October 7th through October 9th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And Sart.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to the latest episode of Backseat Box Office. Art, how's it going?
It is going very well.
All right. A little shorter than I thought it was going to be. Okay. Speaking going very well, well, not really. Let's talk about, as we are wont to do, about the box office results for last weekend. So, this is for the weekend of September 30th through October 2nd. Here's the top five. Out number one, we have new release, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, coming in at $28.9 million. At number two, we have Deepwater Horizon, coming in at $20.2 million. At number three, we have Holdover the Magnificent Seven, at $15.6 million. At number four, we have Storks at $13.5 million. That's also a holdover. And another holdover, Sully at number five, $8.3 million. And there's your top five.
Yeah, those are...
Impressed by $28
million? No, not even a little bit. And that's Tim Burton, right? That is, that's not good.
Well, just to... So they're down from last year, because last year they had The Martian coming out. That was $54.3 million. Followed by Hotel Transylvania 2 at $33 million, Sicario $12 million, The Intern $11 million, and Maze Runner at $7 million. Is Tim Burton still a big draw to you?
I feel like he is, but I don't know. I mean, maybe he's falling out of touch, falling out of favor. I mean, like I said before, Brittany had been interested in the book. She never got around to reading it, but between her interest in the book and it being Tim Burton, I have a modicum of interest. You know, if I hadn't been, you know, particularly busy this past weekend, and I'm going to be busy this next coming weekend as well, it'd be something I'd be looking to put higher on my list of priorities of things to catch, you know. So, but now with this performance in the box office, and then we'll see what word of mouth does. I don't know. Maybe it's just a video rental, or wait till it comes on some streaming service.
Okay. Do you use a mouse with your laptop?
No, I have I use a Mac, so I got the little pad thingy.
Okay. There's a game on one of my podcasts I listen to, Doug Loves Movies, where they talk about. And I think it's called Bad Mojo Rising is the name of the game.
Okay.
And so there's no way for me to really police this, but he asks his panelists the highest grossing Tim Burton movie.
Okay.
And he usually does adjusted for ticket price inflation. So we're going to go ahead and do that. Adjusted for ticket price inflation.
Okay. I'm going to go back to our Batman discussion earlier.
Okay, very good. Batman number one, so you would get 3 points.
Okay.
Batman $545 million. At number two, Alice in Wonderland 2010.
That would have been my second guess.
$364 million. Number three, Batman Returns, $340 million, rounded up.
Yes, Aubrey. Come in quickly.
I didn't hear you.
Okay, what?
What are you guys talking about now?
We're doing our show.
Yeah, but what are you guys talking about?
We're talking about movies. We're talking about a director named Tim Burton and how he has a movie that's not doing very well. Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so...
So I would not have gotten number three. I would have guessed Alice for number two, and... I don't know what I would put in the second spot. I would not have gone to Batman 2, but go ahead. But those are all... Alice is not that old. All the Batmans are.
Well, 2010.
That's 6 years. That's not that. I mean, in the grand scheme of a directing career, or even, you can go 2-3 years, between movies, depending on waiting for a project, blah, 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 blah. But so, okay, continue.
Okay, so the last time that he had a movie that opened for more than $28.8 million, or 0.9, uh-huh. I said, Dark Shadows barely at 29.7, rounded. Alice did 116 million.
Right.
That was 2010. 2005 was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, 56 million. 2001, Planet of the Apes, 68.5 million. Sleepy Hollow, again, 30 million even in 1999. Batman Returns in 92, 45 million. And then Batman, 40 million in 1989. So he hasn't, I guess he's doing okay.
Yeah, but not as much, when you look at the box office numbers like that, not as much cachet as I would have thought. But he has a certain style. Maybe he's just more of a cult thing that comes up after the fact. You look at things like Edward Scissorhands or, Frankenweenie. That was such a good little project, but yeah, I don't think it did much. There is a certain style that he has that, a style and aesthetic that I like, and yeah, maybe it is more of a long tail thing, or maybe it is more of it's just in my head and not as much in the actual results. I don't know.
Yeah, so I mean, it's hard to really say if he's like a widely popular director, other than, do you look at some of the movies recently that he hasn't been getting a lot of. But it isn't necessarily a reflection on him. It's just choices as far as subject matter.
Right. Yeah.
Because you have, would you say that Mrs. Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children is obscure?
The book was popular. I mean, I don't read a lot of books anymore. Mm-hmm. I used to be way more into reading books than I am now. And, Brittany, she runs hot and she runs cold, but she has a very particular taste in what she's reading. And so the fact that I even knew about it as a book, before it was even kind of optioned and made into a movie, that shows that it had some popularity, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it looks like he's always making movies on existing properties. There are a few exceptions, like Big Eyes. I'm not exactly sure if that was an existing thing, but... and I don't know about Frankenweenie. Go ahead.
Frankenweenie, I thought was that based on a book?
Yeah. So let me just run these down real quick. Frankenweenie, Dark Shadows was a TV show. We don't have to talk about Alice in Wonderland. Sweeney Todd was a play. Tim Burton's right. Corpse Bride. I don't know.
That's original.
That's original. Okay. Charlie and yeah. Chocolate Factory, Big Fish, Planet of the Apes, Sleepy Hollow, Mars Attacks. Ed Wood, I believe, is original. Batman Returns, Edward Scissorhands. Edward Scissorhands is probably...
original, as far as I know.
Batman, Beetlejuice, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Well, I can just go to the next tab and do writer. He was a writer on one film, Frankenweenie. Whether it was adapted screenplay, I have no idea, but it says he's a writer.
Well, now I'm trying to remember if... there's something in the back of my head that's telling me that was like originally like a shorter thing that he did as like a small film project when he was younger, and this is like, and then that got made into a book. So was it a screenplay that got turned into a book that got turned back into a screenplay? There's something weird there that I think he was involved even back in the day, but I don't remember. Then I remember people talking about Frankenweenie. I'm gonna have to do some research on that one. But anyway, like I said, I don't know. I find it. I just thought it was interesting. I thought it might get more, a little more, draw than that based on his name, but based on the numbers you're quoting me, it sounds like it hit right in his, where he's at and where they stuck him, kind of in this, this month for a release date. Cause this is not a strong season. We've been seeing, the movies that are coming out right now.
Okay. So according to the, probably not the greatest source, but Wikipedia says that it is a remake of Burton's 1984 short film of the same name.
That's what I thought.
And it's a parody of and an homage to the 1931 film Frankenstein.
Right.
So I guess you'd have to say it's original.
Yeah, yeah. But like I said, I think they did then at some point option a book based on that original short. Or right. There was some other cartoon. But okay, but it was his deal. That's what I thought I remembered. Every now and then, I get a little bone in there and I nod. And I'm like, I got something. I found a treat. There's something hiding in the back of my brain.
Thank
I know
the Lord
stuff.
For audio only. Okay. That kind of ties in Sausage Fest a little bit. Anyways.
Yeah, we'll get there. We will get there, sir.
All right. So we will close the book on this long-winded look at last week's box office and a short review of Tim Burton's career. And now we're going to go over to new movies. So there's actually three movies coming out, but we're going to talk about two of them. So Art, talk to us about the first one.
Okay, the first movie we're going to talk about is The Girl on a Train. It is 45% rotten on the tomato meter. 98% want to see it. Rachel, devastated by her recent divorce, spends her daily commute fantasizing about the seemingly perfect couple who live in a house that her train passes every day. Until one morning, she sees something shocking happen there and becomes entangled in a mystery that unfolds, based on Paula Hawkins' best-selling novel, rated R for violence, sexual content, language, and nudity. Genre, drama, mystery, and suspense, directed by Tate Taylor, written by Aaron Cressida Wilson, runtime 112 minutes. So we have Emily Blunt, Rebecca Ferguson, Halle Bennett, Justin Theroux, Allison Janney, Lisa Kudrow, Luke Evans, Edgar Ramirez, and Laura Pepperon. Wow, I know a lot of these names.
Yeah, that's one thing I was going to say about the cast list.
Yeah,
And I guess Haley Bennett was also in Magnificent Seven, so she has had a very busy year.
Okay, there you go.
So yeah, so obviously, you know, the comparison movie for this is Gone Girl.
Yeah.
But the Gone Girl haven't had a much higher number.
As far as what number? I'm sorry,
the Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes score?
Yeah, so the critic reception was a lot higher. Some choice blurbs from the critics. Kind of a rather cerebral assertion is the film never quite succeeds simply because the book's core virtues do not lend themselves to cinema. That is John Anderson from Wall Street Journal. Chris Knight from the National Post, who probably went in looking for something a little bit more, the result is mostly a bloodless thriller. I don't know if I want a lot of blood for my thrillers, but you know, maybe
right.
It's just me.
It's a thriller. It's not a horror movie. It's a thriller. I don't know. Brittany read this. She enjoyed it. She wouldn't mind seeing the movie. If she wanted to see it, I would definitely see it with her, just to store up some creds so I can make her see something I want to see.
Mm-hmm. There's a jumping on the grenade for that one. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, it really ends up not being like that because she really doesn't want to see a lot of things I see. So it's really just go by yourself. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll just go alone.
I'm like, okay, see ya.
Yep, bye.
All right.
So yeah, I don't know. I may end up seeing this. She has expressed some interest. She did enjoy the book. So we will see where that goes. She read Gone Girl and she watched that one. She actually went to see that without me because she had another friend who had also read the book and they went and saw it together.
I mean, if you compare movies to Gone Girl, they're almost all bloodless. There's a lot of blood in Gone Girl, man.
Okay, I didn't see it, so I could not judge.
All right.
Why don't we move along and you tell us about our other movie?
Yes, well, this could be a natural transition to... This is probably another bloodless movie. I don't know. Someone will have to tell us. The movie I'm going to talk about is Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life. This is 83% on the tomato meter. Out of 6 reviews, 5 fresh and 1 rotten. Thank you, Jeff, for doing the math. And out of 1,498 Rotten Tomatoes users, 77% want to see it. That's rather low for Rotten Tomatoes. So here's the description as I scroll down. Okay. Rafe has an epic imagination and a slight problem with authority. Both collide when he transfers to an oppressive, rule-crazy middle school. Drowning in do's and don'ts, Rafe and his scheming best friend Leo hatch a plan to break every rule in the school's code of conduct. It's Ferris Bueller meets Home Alone as their battle with Principal Dwight explodes in the chaos, both real and imagined. But Dwight displays his own fiendish creativity, striking back at the rule breakers. Meanwhile, Rafe struggles to hide his misbehavior from Jean, the straight-A, overachieving girl of his dreams, and at home, his mother's boyfriend, a moochie jack-of-no-trades named Bear, threatens to become a stepfather. Rated PG for rude humor throughout, almost pervasive, language and thematic elements. This is a comedy, directed by Steve Carr, written by Chris Bowman, Cara Holden, and Hubble Palmer. This is a, I don't want to say tight, but quick 92 minutes. Your cast, Griffin Gluck, if the actor's name wasn't bad enough. His character name is Rafe Kachadorian, also starring Lauren Graham as Jules. One of the guys I like, and I try to see him in every movie he's in, Rob Riggle. Andrew Daly plays Dwight, and some other people I don't really see or don't really know.
Yep. I don't know. I saw the preview for this. It doesn't really interest me. It's like just in that in between period. They're not, kids aren't quite old enough for it to pique my interest enough to watch, and not quite young enough that I'd want to watch it with Aubrey.
Yeah, this is. I wonder why this didn't end up on Disney Channel. I don't know. Usually they have. I don't know if they have. Yeah, they do have some high school and junior high movies. But all right, so. There is our abbreviated look at the movies that are coming out this weekend at the movie theater. And now, just a quick word. There's also another movie, The Birth of a Nation. We decided to disregard that movie based on Oscar bait. So
and low theater count.
And low theater count. Yeah, that's probably a real thing. So there you go. All right. Let's get over to share time. Art? What do you have to share with the class?
Oh, my goodness. So many things to share with the class. Okay. Let's start with the things they care most about. So Luke Cage dropped this weekend. And I am already 10 episodes in. And, oh, my God, I am enjoying it so much. I think it is very much on par with everything else Netflix and Marvel have been collaborating on.
Let me interrupt for just a second. I finished it last night, so you don't have to worry about telling me any plot details. So
I'm not talking any plot deals right now because we're just doing some share time. And very fresh, so anybody who might be listening probably has not worked their way all the way through. It's actually funny. So I went to Sausage Fest this weekend, and we were doing all the things, hanging out, so many things, and we're up late one night, and I jokingly in a Facebook post said, "Hey, this is dropping the same weekend as Sausage Fest. Might we be watching some of this while we're hanging out?" And Tony's like, "I'll have my tablet." And we didn't actually, you know, we played games, we hung out, we did the things we needed to do. But when it was time to go to bed, we went to lay down. And like, well, maybe we could squeeze one episode in before we go to bed. So me and Tony actually watched the first episode together. And then I watched a bunch of episodes on the way home. And then I've been watching more episodes since I got home. And, I'm not quite done yet. Like I said, it's 13 episodes.
Yes.
So I've got 3 episodes to go on. Like I said, I just wrapped up episode 10. I had some real issues with the first episode. The pacing was a little slow. There was some dialogue that was just, it was bad. It was like 20, 25 years dated, kind of felt to me like the writing at first was feeling like this is what a white person thinks a black person should sound like. And I don't know where that was coming from or who did it or what, but that was definitely the vibe that I got. And then that went away. So I didn't feel like that anymore throughout the other 9 episodes I've watched since that point. But there were a few scenes that were just really strong, and I'm like, I think they hadn't figured out exactly who they wanted the characters to be yet. A couple of the characters.
I always think personally that it's really hard to judge a pilot.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if that 100% applies, because you don't really know if he was left alone to make the first episode or not.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You don't know under what situation or whatnot. But I think also I've heard writers, you know, I know some people who are A, professional writers, or B, you know, have literary degrees and do things involved with being creative of one sort or another. And I very often hear people say that the characters kind of take on a life of their own. Mm-hmm. You start writing and then you kind of figure out who they are along the way. And so it felt like it was just one of these hiccups that they kind of hit in the beginning, and they didn't get smoothed back out in the course of making the entire run. And so, and like I said, that first episode is a little slow because there's a lot of setup, and maybe that's what made it made it stand out to me in particular. But I think it's very good. I think it's very well done. I was actually listening to another podcast, and the person was talking about the show and talked about how much they were enjoying it, but that they weren't the target audience. And I felt like they made that statement because they were a white person looking at a predominantly black cast, black show, you know, and enjoying it and thinking that they're not the target audience. I'm like, but how are you not the target audience? You like comic book characters. You like superhero movies. You like the other 3 seasons of movies that are in this vein. You thinking that you aren't the target audience because you're white and these characters are predominantly black would be like me saying the entirety of the Marvel Universe is, I'm not really the target audience because I'm Hispanic and most of those people are white. You know, that's not what makes you the target audience. But I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I grew up watching not a lot, but quite a few of the blaxploitation movies that came out of the 60s and the, you know, late 60s, early 70s. And I like the kind of feel that it has, the callback to that era that this comic came out of. And so for me, I am thoroughly enjoying it. But other than that, I didn't watch anymore. I was trying to watch Stranger Things, and then Luke Cage dropped, and it just snagged me up because I wanted to see that. I was in more of a hurry to see that because a lot of people I know haven't seen it yet. Whereas Stranger Things, people have been watching that for weeks and months, and I'll catch up when I get to it. So that being said, like I said, I also went to Sausage Fest, and that was a big part of this past weekend. And that was, it was epic. It was incredible. Got to spend time with pretty much everybody from the other show. Tony and Lena and Adam and Scott and Kayla. And Daryl even stopped in for a little bit. I know he hasn't been on the show much. He's been very busy, but he came out and saw us, got to say hi, and just had a blast. There were so many other people who are not involved with the other show, but just are part of that group of people who hang out there, Artemis Knight and the Rothlisser, Scott and Faith. I don't know how to pronounce their last name. Sam was absolute blast to hang out with. I had so much fun. It's like you get done doing it and you're like, okay, let's start planning for next year. Cause it was just that much fun, just hanging out and partying. And the amount of costumes that I saw, I mean, there were literally hundreds and hundreds of people in such incredible outfits. There was a guy there in this, one of the characters from Game of Thrones, the Mountain, and he is in this full handcrafted kind of leather armor garb that was just unbelievable. We got to talking with him about it, and you know, we thought it was something that he had bought or what. And he's like, no, I handmade this. So, you know, we went to a tannery and basically bought, you know, two whole cows worth of leather to make this outfit. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you are amazing. So just the you know, it's not Dragon Con. Dragon Con, I hear, is the costuming con to end all costuming cons. But there were a lot of people there in a lot of incredible costumes that were totally worth seeing. I mean, it was just a blast, and I can't wait to do it again next year. You're gonna have to make it out at some point.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I know. Pipe dreams. We got them. So that is it for my share time, sir. How has your last week been?
All right. So I already mentioned that I completely finished Luke Cage.
Yes.
As far as the pacing, I felt that it was a slow series.
Okay.
That some of the other ones are kind of felt like a runaway freight train at certain episodes, because there's just so much going on. You know, it's really amazing with Netflix, because I know four other people that are watching Luke Cage. You're at 10. My buddy Nick is at 4. And there's a couple people in the library that are both on episode 3. And I'm not going to sit here and try to remember exactly what happened episode to episode and trying to figure out what I can say and what I can't say.
It becomes one long movie kind of a thing. Yeah. You know, it's like there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's just like everything happens in that space somewhere.
I think they did a very good job, because they could have went completely to 11 on the whole Shaft homage thing. And to borrow a drumming term, I think they did a very good job of keeping it in the pocket kind of thing.
Yeah, well balanced.
Of all the Easter eggs that I'm reading about, there were two that were missing. And I think I'm gonna talk about one right now, and I'm gonna give some of our listeners some time to watch it, because the second one might be, and there might be some spoilers in it, but there is a point in the show where Frank Whaley's character, or Whaley's, I don't even know, he's talking about burgers, right? Mm-hmm. And he was talking about, well, you know, usually I go to this burger over here, but you know, they're not as good. And I was just waiting for him to say, but it's no Kahuna Burger, which is a callback to Pulp Fiction, because he was in the very first scene in Pulp Fiction, and Kahuna Burger was like a big, and I was waiting for it, because you know in the Winter Soldier, on Nick Fury's gravestone, they put the name of the verse that he would say in Pulp Fiction on the gravestone.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was thinking they did a callback, Pulp Fiction. Oh, yeah. Anyways. No, I was a little concerned at certain points that, you know, because it kind of felt like Daredevil a little bit.
Well, hey, that's understandable. You know, they're tying these all together. They're all taking place within the same area. They're all dealing with kind of this street level. So, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, well, I think they ended up telling a different story or a variation on a theme. There are some light touches that made this very unique for me.
Yeah.
And most of it has to do with Brooklyn's Paradise. I absolutely loved the music and how they tied in the music, not necessarily just the soundtrack.
Harlem Paradise.
they're just hanging out in that club.
Yeah.
And, you know, not necessarily the same person, but there's like two or three people that are just sitting there and just listening to the jam that's going on.
Yeah.
And that was really cool.
It was good. And I like that they changed it up. You know, there is a general kind of like soundtrack that has a certain feel to it, you know, calling back to that era and the blaxploitation. But then they have the very specific acts that are performing in the club, And they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, they to the Method Man and doing rap to, I think the last episode I caught, it looked like one of the classic, you know, like something out of the Tops era or, you know, or the Pips or, you know, one of those classic era, Motown kind of sound. And they just go all over the place. And yeah, I really have liked the music and liked seeing those acts like just integrated into the scenes.
A conversation that I had on the way home from work today with Nick, and he's only seen four episodes, but the casting that they're doing for these Netflix shows is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
The only person that I really would take exception with was Alfre Woodard.
Who is?
Black Mariah.
Oh.
I don't know. She did a good job. But yeah, I don't know. I was hoping for someone that was a little, I don't know. I didn't get a lot of strength coming from her.
Okay.
I
can see it. I definitely would have, I wouldn't call her one of the strongest rungs on the ladder for sure.
Well,
the series isn't suffering from it.
Right.
You know, there are sometimes people where they turn their performance that's so bad it just kind of drags everything else down. And I think she's doing good. But yeah, they could have got somebody who would have done great.
Yeah, but I liked who they got for Misty, even though I didn't have a lot of baggage with me on what Misty would have to, you know, be like.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, because I never read any Luke Cage, and I only know Luke Cage from, you know, Jessica Jones, kind of thing.
Right. I knew a little more of him than that, but not a lot. And, yeah, no, I knew nothing at all about Misty. Misty Knight was a non-entity. Right. I talked about listening to Geek History Lesson last week. Mm-hmm. The last two episodes, one is Luke Cage, and the other one is Misty Knight. And they are a couple of perfect episodes to listen to. Kind of to get more of the background on the characters, who they are and kind of what drives them. And Misty Knight has always been more of she's gotten a lot more time in Iron Fist's books because they were an item off and on for a long time. So that's where you get a lot more Misty Knight. She has made a lot of appearance in Luke Cage, but she's made a lot more in Iron Fist. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out with Iron Fist, you know, being next up in the queue as far as the four that were announced to lead up to the Defenders.
Yeah, so I think I don't want to say any more until you've finished it.
No, yeah, I don't want to say any more for other people who might be listening.
Yeah. Okay. So considering that we are recording almost a week from when it premiered, that's pretty much all I watched. I will say this. I have been watching this show on FX called Better Things. And it's mainly because I'm a fan of Pamela Adlon, who's she's been on other shows and she's kind of a raw comedic actress. But it's a half hour sitcom that kind of follows in the footsteps of all these other shows that are semi-autobiographical about comedians, like Louie and the Jim Gaffigan show that's not on anymore. Right. But it's more about her life as an actress, being divorced and having raising three daughters. It's all right, but I just she carries the show for me. And it's got some good writing, but you know, some things that you might, some arguments between parents and children that you might see, when the kids are growing up in Hollywood, they kind of tweak them a little bit. So, but I'm enjoying it, but I'm sure it's not for everybody. But you know, moms might enjoy, that show. All right. So Luke Cage and, Better Things and, I don't know. You get a good feeling about what Iron Fist is going to be about?
I really don't know. It's He is a much more magical, fantastical character.
Well, he could be, but he might not be.
He might not be. I'm wondering if they put him in the last slot to kind of determine what they wanted to do with him. Because, like, if the other three had came out and they had been kind of lukewarm, or one had been a success and the other ones had not been so good, maybe they would do something more street level with him. You know, with what I would say with that. With how well the other three have done, in my opinion, I think they might be willing to push a little more and say, okay, let's look at what we can really do with this and know that people are watching, people are tuning in, people are, you know, some people are probably signing up to get in on this train. You know, that I heard from multiple sources that Netflix crashed over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're attributing that directly to the demand to see Luke Cage. That's impressive. That means something. You know, people are watching this. We were watching a lot of Netflix, but it's not a particular weekend that, you know, it wasn't a holiday or anything. It's not like there were a bunch of extra people off. That was the big thing that dropped that weekend, and people were tuning in to see it. So,
true.
So they, going back to that podcast again, they talked about how what they'd like to see for an Iron Fist issue, Iron Fist story arc. You know, they compared it to some of the story arcs that have been done in the comics, and I just think it could be really interesting, and I'd like to see them take that mystical bent on it.
Well, I was going to say we might see a tone shift a little bit. You know, because we also have Doctor Strange coming in 3 weeks.
We do. That's right.
So maybe there could be crossover between those two things. Who knows?
Well, we've yet to see any real crossover between the two series, between what's going on in the movies and what's going on on Netflix. You know, we've had the images and the newspapers. But we haven't had any like real tangible characters walk over from one world to the other.
Well, okay. Let me ask you this then: the kid that's selling the Blu-rays of
right.
the incident.
Yeah.
What is that referring to?
No, I know. I'm not saying they're not part of the same shared universe. I'm saying we haven't had any actual actors kind of crossover. You know, any kind of connection like with the actual people. No, I'm not disputing that it's not. You know, and that goes back to the first Daredevil. You know, Ben Urich had all the papers behind his desk talking about, you know, what happened. You know, in Luke Cage, they're talking about aliens coming from another planet, invading the Earth, you know, talking about alien metal. So, no, they're absolutely happening in the same universe. I'm just saying we haven't seen, people directly cross over like we have in, say, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely with you there. But once you finish Luke Cage, we'll probably need to talk about, you know, how you'd rank all of the Marvel Netflixes.
That's going to be so hard.
Yeah, no, I know, but that's what podcasts are for.
Okay.
All
I'll
right.
Think about
so,
it.
This is going to be the end of share time, so let's get over to news. And I'm just going to warn you right now, this could be a little rough on my side. So,
Yeah, we'll keep it light. We'll keep it short. We'll move on.
Yeah. All right. Art, what do you have?
Okay. Let's see. First up on my list. Okay. Well, we've been talking so much about Netflix. Let's just lead off with this one. Where?
I'm about to
close. How Netflix just seriously pissed off movie theaters.
Mm-hmm. Click. Go ahead.
So. So I thought this was interesting because we've talked about this, the day and date release and whatnot. For decades, movie releasing formula remained consistent. A feature film would first be released in theaters, spend some time there for a couple of months, and then it would eventually arrive on home media. Then the popular online streaming service Netflix threw a wrench into the works when it started producing its own original movies to accompany its original TV content. And so now they're trying to get, you know, simultaneous release, and the theaters are fighting it tooth and nail. Well, finally somebody caved. iPick currently only has 105 screens across 15 theaters. They're expanding 20 more locations in the next year or two. But they're luxury theaters, you know, dinner, recliners, you know, very nice. But so they are going to be putting some Netflix shows in their theater. The theater organizers are not entirely happy with this. There is a, what do you call it, an association that's called NATO, the National Association of Theater Owners.
Oh, my God. So, come on, people.
Find another acronym. This is talking come about on. Movies. You can do better. So they sent out a public statement reaffirming their belief that a period of exclusivity regarding theatrical releases is important to both movie theaters and the movie industry in general. I just don't understand the problem. I mean, if they can... If the movies start doing well enough to release simultaneously, why wouldn't you want that extra revenue stream? I mean, if it's not like some of these Cineplexes are so big, there are movies that are sitting in there not doing anything that, you know, that are mostly empty. If you could assign one theater to be, you know, doing these day and date releases, and I don't know, they're just so threatened by the world changing it. It makes no sense. The world is going to change. Technology constantly changes the world. That's just the way it goes. You know, you don't get to hold on to the past. You have to move to the future. I just don't get it. But whatever. They're going to keep doing what they're doing because they think that's the way they need to go.
Yeah, they just feel like no one's going to come to theater if they couldn't watch it the same day.
Right.
Now, for them to get bent out of shape over this story, IPIC is more of a luxury theater. I mean, their average ticket price, $30.
Oh, are they that? Wow, is it that much?
I didn't yeah,
that
there, much. There's that a. I'm looking at this Business Insider, and they say the partnership aims to play into people's evolving movie consumption habits by honing in on an upscale out-of-home viewing experience. A pioneer with its in-theater dining and oversized leather recliners, IPIC specializes in giving customers a taste of luxury, as reflected in the chain's higher-than-average $30 ticket prices. The fact that nearly all 98% of IPIC customers subscribe to a streaming service, with 84% subscribing to Netflix, could play in favorably to consumer preferences. So they're just trying to get their foot in the door. And they're waiting for a bigger chain to break ranks. Whether that's going to happen or not, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I did not know the prices were. I mean, the last time I feel like it hasn't been that long. The last time I went to an IPIC, I thought it was like $15.
No, I've never heard of them.
Oh yeah, I've been. They're in the Chicago market. Like there was one just down the street from me. We went. It's a very nice theater, but I swear I remember the price being like 15, not 30, because I would not pay $30 to see a movie.
Yeah. Well, I do. Like I have tickets to go see Doctor Strange.
And... That's different. We've discussed that because there's a bunch of other things involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
You'll pay $20 just for a T-shirt. Mm-hmm. You know. And so that eats up the majority of that cost right there.
Right.
And then they're throwing in other things on top of that. So that's not the same as $30 to sit in a very nice seat with a very nice sound system. No.
Okay.
That's just me.
Yeah. No.
Because there are also very nice theaters that serve food that don't charge. They have, you know, there's a theater just down the way where, you know, they have nice leather recliner seats and they have, the food was phenomenal. You know, we had the sushi and we had the dessert and the salted caramel milkshake and food was fantastic. But I think the ticket price was $12.50, you know, so $30 just seems a bit out of proportion. But I don't know. And like I said, I'm going to have to go look up that IPIC that was down the street from me and see if what the prices are there. And if, because they said average price, right? I mean,
yeah,
I still can't imagine what market is drawing up the average that much.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look into it, but so tell me, sir, what do you have next?
Well, I feel like that we talked a good amount of Luke about Luke Cage. So I'm just going to mention that it looks like that they're going to release the soundtrack for the Luke Cage series.
Oh, nice. I hope that is a huge, double disc.
But you can find on the internet that some guy has put together a Spotify playlist of all the music. Okay. And it looks like tomorrow they're going to release the soundtrack on vinyl.
Nice. That's classy.
The picture is going to have, the discs are, yellow. You know, they kind of coincide with the cover.
Like a yellow silk shirt.
Well,
a fine black man.
Not necessarily that, but at one point in the series, he had a hoodie that had a yellow lining in the hood. And they actually show him on the cover with it on.
Right.
Yeah.
But at one point, they had him in the outfit.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah. No, I know.
For oh so brief a moment. But right. Yeah, no.
Even with the headpiece.
I know. Yeah. I know. Oh, man. When they put that on, I'm like, oh, yes. Yes, thank you. Yes. Not for the whole show, but for a moment, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Art, what you got next?
Okay. Blade Runner 2 reveals its title and a key new detail. So Blade Runner 2 is now officially being titled Blade Runner 2049. So Harrison Ford, like I said, like we talked about before, he's back reprising his role as Rick Deckard. And he has, what is his name? Ryan Gosling co-starring with him. And it is moving forward. Things seem like they are going well. And so we talk about the continued climate change being a part of the movie. Los Angeles is taking up nearly all of the West Coast. Pollution has reached an all-time high. And they are slated for October 6, 2017. So we are literally 1 year out from Blade Runner 2. So I need to, I don't even know. I'm very excited. This is truly one of my favorite movies. I've got that suitcase edition with the, five or six different versions of the movie and the little police hover car and the little folded metal, the origami unicorn. And just, I'm very excited. I can't wait to see where this goes. I can't wait to start seeing, clips and trailers and more spoilers and bring it on. I'm very excited. This is like, with a new Star Wars coming out or a new Star Trek, or I put it in that same vein, but just with a completely different feel for me. So, yeah, I'll stop babbling now. I'm not that excited. I'm totally excited.
All right. I still need to beat the DC horse a little bit. So Hollywood Reporter has a story. Ben Affleck says he loved how Batman versus Superman turned out. So these are quotes from Mr. Affleck, who I'm about 50-50 on. People either thought he was a really good Batman or they hated him. But anyways, okay. So here is Mr. Affleck. It's the biggest hit of my career and had a lot of editorial negativity, although I think the reviews, and then he stops and says, fans went and I got a lot of positive response. So they're asking him about Batman v Superman because he's doing the press tour for this other movie, The Accountant.
Right. It looks interesting.
Speaking of interesting, he said it was interesting, that movie, because it was judged not necessarily on execution so much as its tone. Just to remind you, the reviews for Batman v Superman were not stellar. It holds at 27% on Rotten Tomatoes. Still, the film opened number one and grossed more than $873 million worldwide. Some people wanted to have a lighter tone to the movie, and I thought that was interesting because that's subjective, said the actor. Tone isn't like a qualitative thing. It's subjective, right? Some tones resonate with me and might not with you. And the tone of the movie was really parallel to the Frank Miller book, which I liked and thought was great. I'm glad that so many people went and so many people liked the movie and it worked out. I don't know. I'm not, I don't know if that worked out, but anyways. I just thought that was, take another sip of Kool-Aid, Ben. All right. Art, anything to say about that?
No, I don't even know where to go with that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What do you got next?
Okay. So this really caught my eye. So we all remember Doug from Up,
mm-hmm.
right?
Click.
Doug from Pixar's Up comes to life in this adorable new video. So there's this video out there, and Disney has set up a real-life Doug. And it's cute, it's funny, it's adorable, it's totally worth watching. But the bigger story in this is that Disney is setting up this whole in-real-life IRL video series where they're going to be real-lifing some of their, you know, cartoon characters bringing things out and shooting videos and putting them out there and just generating content that is just going to be really cool and fascinating. So I can't wait to see what else comes out of this.
Hmm. All right. Okay. I need to ask you, how far are you on Stranger Things?
Still, I haven't made it past third episode. So that's it. I completely stopped moving forward on Stranger Things and started utterly devouring Luke Cage.
All right.
So
Gizmodo.com has a story titled "Documents Reveal Stranger Things Really Freaked Out the Department of Energy."
Okay.
Okay.
Because the holes in the universe are going to open up because of the research that the Department of Energy is doing.
Well.
They've already done it. Damn it. We're fucked.
So they claimed that the Department of Energy does not explore parallel universes.
It's kind of a given.
Okay, so I guess there's a thing called the Free Beacon. So this writer, Lachlan Marquet, kind of thought, well, you know, the Department of Energy is a public agency, right? So any public agency, they're going to have public records?
Yeah.
So he filled out a public records request. Show me everything that you have about the show Stranger Things.
Oh, jeez.
And there's a twit pic of, like, this 50-page document. And so he tweeted, I FOIA'd, which I'm assuming is Freedom of Information Act.
Yes.
DOE's Public Affairs Office for Internal Talk and Netflix of Stranger Things. And he said, this is more than I expected. and they kind of found a document that kind of refutes their whole thing that they don't explore parallel universes. There's a thing down here. It's not true that the Energy Department does not explore parallel universes. We support theoretical physicists / cosmologists through the Office of Science High Energy Physics Program, some of whom are almost certainly are doing a fair amount of research on parallel universes. Stranger still, the writer of the article says, Marquez has since deleted that tweet. What could the DOE be trying to cover up? Another email, members of the DOE admitted to manufacturing weapons and experimenting on humans during nuclear testing. This is kind of funny, but maybe there'll be a part two when Art gets further. Because there was a tweet exchange between the DOE and the writer that might be a minor spoiler. So I'll favorite this and we'll come back to it next week or next
Sounds
show.
Sounds good.
All right. And that was my last news story. Art?
Okay. Well, I will finish up with Enchanted 2 just took a major step forward. So I was a big fan of Enchanted with Amy Adams and Patrick Dempsey. And Cyclops. I'm totally blanking on his name. The actor who played Cyclops.
Oh my god.
Yeah. You blank too. Yay! It's not just me. Anyway. I really enjoyed that
James
movie.
James Marsters.
And that's the one.
Yeah. Okay.
I knew you could do it. You're much better with names than I am. Anyway, so 2007. It was 2007. Oh my goodness. It has been 9 years since that movie came out.
You want to feel old?
Stop. No, I already am old. Okay, so I worked the door at Sausage Fest, and mm-hmm. so I had to card all of these people. And so there was somebody who were like, ugh, I'm so old. Why are you even bothering to card me? I card everybody. I'm older than you. No, you're not. Yes, I am. Give me your ID. Shut up and get in the room. So go ahead. Make me feel old. I already am old. But you get to be
was
older.
Was there a show on Nickelodeon called Double Dare or something like that?
Yeah, I used to love Double Dare.
30 years ago, it premiered.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was an actual kid when that came out. Anyway, 30 years ago. Oh, jeez. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Okay, so I really loved, started animated, came into the real world, told a great story. Ella Enchanted 2 is back on track with a new director being eyed to lead the charge. So this is what happened. Not as happy. So Adam Shankman is in negotiations to helm Enchanted 2, which is officially titled Disenchanted. Okay. Terrible. So, game. But the thing that got me was where is she becomes disenchanted with her whole happily ever after, blah, 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 blah. But where is... So Adam Shankman... plenty of musical experience helming Hairspray, Rock of Ages, theatrical adaptations, and I didn't really care for either of those. And I'm like, so this kind of has me, I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out. But they still, he's trying to get the job. He hasn't officially gotten the job yet. So
there's still hope.
There's still hope. Yeah, we'll see where it goes. So it could just go completely down the toilet and I won't be seeing it at all if he ends up on the project, probably, unless the trailer looks fantastic. But we all know how they can lie to you with a trailer. So we'll see what happens. But that is my last story. Ella Enchanted 2 coming.
All right, so that's going to be it for this episode of Backseat Box Office. If you would like to leave us a comment about something that you've heard tonight, or just let us know something that you've liked or disliked, you could find multiple ways to do that at our website, backseatproducers.com. Other than that, I am going to, on behalf of Art and myself, thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time. Art, say goodbye.
Buenas noches.